Okay. A little bit of recording. Oh. Let me take off. Oh. Tonight, whenever you come get me or come send somebody or whatever. Bye! Okay. Let's see. Oh. You know, I wouldn't record so much if I had the headphones on my head. But I seem to keep either forgetting them, or I've lost them, or something. So, that's kind of what's happening there. That's okay. I can sit here and talk while I walk. There's a lot of cigarettes that aren't put out. I end up starting a fire. Ignoramuses. But I don't care. Anyway. So, got on Facebook. My father was wanting to, was saying that, like, the Mariner's Lodge would get better exposure that way. It would if I did anything beyond just having a reference to it on Facebook. If I actually showed it around to people, I suppose. I guess it would be good. In the 50s, nice breezes. Of course, what qualifies as breezes here are stiff winds, I guess, in many places. Unlike Shetland, who has tougher winds than we do. I watched some videos, and literally, you can't stand up against those winds. So, but Shetland is a walker's paradise. I got a map for, I don't even know what that map is anymore. Hope I hung on to it. As I get back into my walking. Which I think is the ultimate exercise. And one you can do your whole life. So, I have to keep looking up to make sure I don't get ran over. Lisa told me I need to get some of that reflective tape so that people can see me better. Although pretty soon, here in a couple of weeks, we're going to change to daylight saving time. Oh no, we actually changed that to standard time. Why do we call it standard time? I'll never know. Daylight saving time is a lot longer. We spend more time on it. Anyway. So. Anyway, one of my friends was doing a big article about what they wanted to call telepsychiatry. And, you have to understand, because being done by a group called Team Builders, I don't know exactly what that entails. It was started by, a couple. She is a social worker, and he has no particular education at all. You know, not to denigrate those who don't have education, but anyway. I first met them in Tucumcari as a, where I worked with I worked with the Maternal and Child Health Council. And they were really a very freaky little outfit. I joined the board of a local youth treatment foster program that they had originally brought them either back to Tucumcari or whatever. Oh wait, I'm confused. He was a licensed practicing nurse. He was a 1-year nursing student. Had that first year license. That's time. Who knows what they got now? They were working for him, and the impression I got of them as they sued this nonprofit for wrongful dismissal, I have no sense. And And it all seemed to end up just being a vendetta against my friend who had built up this thing, run this nonprofit, and you know, and that's just the impression I had of them. Their whole point of being involved with the Health Council was to do advertising for their business. And it was a really interesting business. She was a very strange type of a character. The name Zoolander was their original attempts were to do those team building exercises for companies, corporate team building. And I always had a bad taste in my mouth about them. I thought they were conniving snakes myself. Now, other people have other opinions. I may be wrong. Everybody has their biases. You know, I'm showing mine. I almost went to work for them twice. Because, you know, I was in Tucumcari and there weren't very many jobs available for somebody like me. And both times, I just walked away. I just walked away. Because there's a whole thing of, I'm sorry, I can't work for the Friedel. And recently, their bread and butter funding that kept their organization going in New Mexico, at least, came apart. And, looks like they're, still doing stuff. Telepsychiatry is interesting. You know, I'm sure that this press release that got turned into this blog, which is all about how wonderful the company was, I'm sorry, the concept of tele-anything right now is so silly for saying how revolutionary and amazing it is, how they pioneered, and you're going, pioneered what? But saying we're the pioneers of telehelp desk, as if seeing somebody's face makes all the difference. You know, so that was groovy and cool back in the 80s when it was hard. Now it's so laughably easy. Any guy with a psychiatrist shingle and a Skype account can do exactly the same thing, and you don't require the, quote, specialized expertise, you know, that came from team builders. Because I don't think they were on the cusp of anything. I put it right up there with how amazing people think Apple is for having come up with the iPhone. And you're going, what are you talking about? I said, neither one of those two were an innovation on any level whatsoever. It was, you know, I don't even understand how that marketing even works. I think it comes more from, I think it almost feeds more off of our most puerile attitudes. It's about coming up with a relatively mid-price Lamborghini, and if everybody loves Lamborghini, you know, yeehaw, hip hip hooray. I see nothing about Apple's model that justifies what happened. You know, I just don't see it. There were MP3 players before, fine ones, far more versatile. And not innovative at all. In fact, as far as I'm aware of, the original iPod was basically a Palm Life drive with fewer features. And how it became what it became is absolutely, it's inexplicable. I don't know if they sprinkled MSG on it. I don't know if they made a patch with the devil. I don't know. It may have been good marketing. Who knows? Because it certainly wasn't amazing technology at all. But regardless, you know, it seemed like everything that's got Apple stuck onto it all of a sudden sold millions of units. You know, within a couple of weeks, I don't understand why. But it's kind of like that, you know, I don't know. I was wondering if Team Builders had been sold off by the Friedels before it became obvious that the company was going down. Or what, you know, I wouldn't put it past them. But it seems like what's happening, and I'd be the first one to say that it's quite likely that the Friedels put out that press release themselves, trying to ramp up their business in towards consulting. And consulting towards nothing. I'm sorry, this is something any psychiatrist or psychologist with an old computer could pull off. Is to get especially where the primary mode of figuring any of this stuff out is through talk. And a little bit of looking. You know, this is not new, it's not amazing, it's not anything. So I found it very telling. Do I have a built-in thing about the Cradle of Death. I avoid them. I don't work for them. And yes, they have been quite successful. And you know what? That's fine, whatever. This all kind of came up because yesterday I was thinking about, I can't call them goals, not what my patriarchal blessing says about being a person with the means to do and to participate in the work of the Lord in the world. And I was thinking of a way to, I don't know if it's shortcutting that, make it happen sooner, or but I said, you know what? So I could almost immediately get a job somewhere that's a little distasteful, that's a little difficult to work for. Which is what I've done in the past for, like, TGS. TGS is one of those jobs where only certain sorts of people can do it. But I could. And I got, good pay for it. I have yet, still, nearly 20 years later, I'm still not making as much money. Take home pay as I made in my late 20s working for TGS Offshore. It's amazing. Someday I'm going to get there. I keep getting closer, but because of the way because the way jobs work these days, every pay increase you get, every new job you go after, where it's like, oh, you make sizably more than you did before, it's eaten up by benefits or mandatory this or mandatory that. I keep downsizing. And I can't make up the gap. It keeps happening to me. It's stunning. Absolutely stunning. So, anyway. An interesting, take on modern life is that I'm still struggling to get back to a pay level where I once was. You know, not that ends up being the big thing, it's just an interesting guideline to the whole issue. And frankly, the way that my opportunities are going, it seems like it may not ever be a money thing so much as it is a capability and, you know, means doesn't necessarily have to mean money. It can mean the ability, it can mean, I don't know, gravitas. It can mean a lot of things, that contribute to making something happen. And it's never good to tie that to money. Although it does say that I'll be comfortable and happy, and I'm still waiting for comfort to happen. You know. And it's like, Father, I'd really rather not have this comfort, you know, pop up for 10 minutes when I'm 64 or 72. And it's like, okay, you're comfortable now. Enjoy it quick because it's going to go away soon. It's like, oh, but this checks it off on your thing. I kept my promise to you. Thing that you'd be comfortable and happy. I'm like comfortable and nervous, but that's okay. We gotta hang in there. If God says something, we put our faith in it. It's gonna happen. I'm just terribly impatient, always have been. But I think most people are. Not that justification at all. Okay. So yeah. I'm certainly doing many things that my peers aren't doing, and we're just going to see what comes of it. I'm totally, I don't know. Frankly, I got this job, although this job ended up being kind of it's a stepping stone. That's obvious. Stepping stone to other things, and it's just a question of where the next step will be. I want to get my master's done, although there's going to be three weeks here of just not doing much on that front. I need to get out my, I should be able to get out my abstract today for a presentation I'll be making in mid-November at a conference. And, then we're gonna, you know, and then I can concentrate on my Shetland project, which is really a prime motivator. One of my motivations is every month I do a report to the people who I've included in this group, and I want to be able to actually show some real progress. Talk is cheap, you know, and everything you do, it's important that you get out of that talk phase where everybody starts. Well, I'm going to start a company that does this. And then you go, well, that never got out of the green phase. And you go, let's keep jumping over the things that make people say, you know, I've heard this 1,000 times from 1,000 different people. How they're going to get rich doing this and this. I said, this thing has nothing to do with money. Because there's no money in this at all, as far as I'm aware. But what it would, might provide, ultimately, is some notoriety. So yesterday, in my recording, I was talking about, politicians and actors. And that mostly has to do more with lightning striking and stuff like that. And the most important thing is to do something. Have what you do be the criteria upon which you're based. If it's based on something that really doesn't have anything to do with you, you shouldn't anticipate any sort of long-term anything. You know, things that end up being based on popularity are really quite meaningless. And in the United States, I'll be really honest, it's all about popularity. America is quite hyper about it, from top to bottom, inside out. The people we respect the most are movie stars. That's why our politicians the ones that really seem to skyrocket over time. There's the old timers from before you really had pictures, before they even had video in the chambers. Everybody started dressing better. Maybe even putting on some makeup or looking good in the camera. And started becoming media figures, celebrities, or anything else. I think Bill Clinton was the first real celebrity president. Barack Obama is almost a come along there. Nobody's done more television show work than Barack Obama. I'm sure it's to a certain extent because, you know, somebody's run those numbers and said, oh yeah, you know, if life is a popularity contest, and it is in the United States at least, you've got to be willing to do that. I would rather go someplace else where there's still a fighting chance that your competence is recognized. And they want you because you're confident, not because you would look good on a TV screen. Some of our most successful companies in the United States are headed up by actors and models. People that really, you know, don't have any skills besides they're beautiful and they've become popular off that beauty. It's really interesting. Not all companies work that way, but more and more they are. That's where Steve Jobs came from. They talked about his hippie background and stuff like that. And I said, you know what? I said, I see Steve Jobs more as the superstar CEO. The one that goes out and shows you how to make a lot of money. And it really ended up being Steve Jobs being able to reinvent himself on a regular basis. when he left, when he was ousted from Apple, because he was not a traditional businessman at all, and he founded Next Computer Company, he came up with probably one of the best computers you've ever been. One of the most truly unique ones. And I think he learned from that experience that you can sell, you know, it says a superior product rarely does well. Because what people want out of products aren't superiority, they are, they want, they want prestige, they want to look cool, they want their socioeconomic status to rise, and, you know, it has something to do with the accoutrements on this. And, I think Steve Jobs' biggest thing was his ability to learn what was really wanted, what would push millions and millions of people's buttons, where he came, you know, and, you know, he became this amazing thing. And I'll say, oh, he's the most greatest CEO in the world. And you go, no, he's not. He never was. His company was based on the absolutely craziest business strategy that ever was. And the only reason why that it dominated all, that it ever got any purchase at Apple, was because if you didn't come along, you were gone. He would think impossible, seemingly impossible things, and then he would push you to make those seemingly impossible things happen. And that was what he did. Is Apple going to fade? Of course it's going to fade. I don't think there are very many people that can pull that off. The guy who ultimately took control of the company was one of the business guys. I don't think he can keep it up. I was listening to one of those TED Talks by Guy Kawasaki, which was one of the, not early Apple guys, but joined the company back, I think, in Jobs' first reign. Kind of a Macintosh sort of fella. And, and he is an absolute, Steve Jobs was his god, type of a guy. And he gave a little presentation about what he learned from Steve Jobs. And it was a collection of absolute garbage. I'm sorry. You know, Guy Kawasaki makes a lot more money than I do, therefore, you know, he's a god. And my critique of it is meaningless because I'm not on that level. But yeah, there was a whole bunch of weird stuff, mostly about how to treat people, treat your customers like children. I'm not saying it doesn't work. Obviously it did. And it's just an indication that at least what would currently be classed as the greatest people on earth, once you die, it becomes solidified. Is based on just two or three salient concepts that usually are quasi-Machiavellian. It has a lot to do with treating people like automatons. It has a lot to do with marketing evil is good. You know, encouraging people's lowest values, or not even rising to the term value. The iPod and the iPhone were all about cachet, looking cool, and feeling a part of the cool crowd. And that's all there is to it. Was it amazing? No. Most of the concepts in it were not innovative at all. Like I said, I think most innovation actually ended before World War II. The time of great innovation was from the 20s through the 30s, probably, was when most of the stuff that we have now was actually figured out. We've gotten to the point where we can miniaturize things, but that's not a great innovation. That innovation also came out of the 20s and the 30s. It maybe had took 20 or 30 more years to figure out how to do this profitably, but the concepts were already there. All the actual brain work to it had already been done. And let me tell you, the age today, and the iPad, and the iPod, and the iPhone, are just indicative of it, are simply mashup. Apple's contribution to it is that they put it in a white case, round off the edges, and stick the Apple logo on it, and then charge twice as much as anybody else. Oh, and make it proprietary, which, boy, let me tell you, I have no idea why that helps, and it doesn't. It has nothing to do with it. I think if that's anything that Steve Jobs learned is that you can do almost anything to anybody. You can talk to me about almost anything. If it makes them look cool, or somehow raises their stature. He's famous for saying, "We don't do anything cheap." You know, and that was one of the most important things. When people would ask him questions like that, he'd go, "What? That's stupid, because it didn't fit into his marketing philosophy at all. His marketing philosophy is people will pay money to have something that makes them cool. So Steve Jobs became cool, and whatever he said was cool, it was cool. And that was it. Welcome to the marketing style. I'm sorry, Tim Cook isn't cool. Making him the CEO of the company was absolutely idiotic. And I can't think for a minute that Steve Jobs would have been, well, you know, I don't know. In order to be that kind of a person, you have to almost be able to suspend reality. And I think it's hard to tell just what ingredient makes something magic. I don't think he knew a whole lot more than anybody else did. And, you know, the first thing you do is you don't ask questions. When there's a freight train coming through and it's getting the job done, you're making a lot of money, you don't sit there and analyze it, question it, try to dink with it. You just ride that sucker. And you make a lot of your money, too. That's why, I mean, other companies have tried to duplicate Apple's success, tried to figure out exactly what it was. I think to a certain extent, it was Steve Jobs himself. And that because of that, you know, it's pretty much, you know, Apple's pretty much going to start to fade out. Because I think Steve Jobs was a god that other celebrities groveled at. And so when Steve Jobs said, this is insanely cool and you want it, you know, all the other celebrities would say, yeah, I've got my iPhone, and that was it. You know, what does it indicate? People are sheep. People are sheep. And we've made, I don't know how the American public became so sheepy, but they are, for just not really thinking about anything. And yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I don't know why I covered that whole jag for it. And it's not an indictment of Steve Jobs, you know? He is great. I think Guy Kawasaki doesn't get it on any level at all. He thought it was Jobs' process. So he was trying to teach people about the process. And of course, since it has Steve Jobs' name on it, he gets to make a little more money off of it. You know, even in his death, Steve Jobs is worth quite a bit. How many corporate CEOs, and I'll be the first to say that Steve Jobs was the weirdest CEO on the face of the earth. How many CEOs' biography upon their death becomes a bestseller? Hardly any. And it's because CEOs typically don't really have anything salient to say. You know, apparently there aren't really any great secrets that you can adopt that will all of a sudden turn your company from being, you know, middle of the road, not very exciting, into some kind of economic juggernaut. Apparently there's no real secret to doing this. You know? And apparently it's so ephemeral that even that CEO themselves, riding on that wave and how amazing it is, they don't really know how it happened either. Although you'll be hard pressed to get them to admit any such thing. You know, the whole thing about being popular is don't question the popularity. You know, get yourself an image consultant. Do the things that popular people do to stay popular. Nobody's sure how that really works either. Because popularity is an interesting animal that you really can't control. So anyway, I don't know how I got there, because what I was wanting to talk about, now that I'm nearly halfway done with my walk, is, you know, I'm impatient. And I don't believe patience is the act of just sitting and waiting for something to happen. I think you still do things not knowing what the future is going to be. My thing 2 years ago was just to take advantage of opportunities that came my way. If I decided to go and do my master's degree, and my whole concept that I've been working on for a while is certify what you know and what you can do. Actually, it really ends up being certify what you can do. I don't know if there's a way to certify what you know. That comes from certification not being an end of itself, but merely what it is, a certification. Too many people, like I think a lot of the guys at my work, they have degrees in networking or information technology that they went to school to get. And do they have any real aptitude at it? That's debatable. Sometimes you kind of wonder. And I don't tend to get certificates until it just occurs to me to do it. And I don't tend to study to get them particularly. I don't know, I did. I studied a little bit to get my Linux certificate. When I set up those appointments to do it, usually 2 or 3 weeks in the future from when it just occurred to me that I should probably do this, I would. I would go and I would take a look at what the criteria was, and go through the criteria thing and look up information on what the criteria was, and hopefully get a better sense of what was being asked for. But yeah, I certainly didn't spend the bulk of my time doing it. Although before each one of those testing things, I would actually overnight in Albuquerque, which is where the tests were, so I didn't have to get up early and rush over there and maybe potentially be late or something. I didn't want to screw up those things. These are expensive. It costs like $300 for a certificate. And I would pour over it pretty hard that day. And then, you know, go and I felt like my passing of these tests was almost a fluke. But it seems to be a pretty consistent fluke. So, it doesn't bother me because $150, well, the next certificate I plan on getting, which is ITIL Foundation. It's a really basic certificate. Not anything really amazing. But it seems like a growing number of people want that from their project managers, from guys that are the leaders of what's happening. And so it's going to be important to get. I need to kind of look at what on earth it's about. I mean, looking at a little bit of it, I may take it sometime this winter because I think it'd be a good thing to have on the old resume. And it would hopefully certify what basically I already know or what I can pick up pretty quickly. So when people say, well, do you have this? Do you have this? And you go, yeah, I got that. Oh. Well, it cost $150. Pretty low price test take compared to most. So, yeah. Am I going to take it? Yeah, heck yeah, I'm going to take it. It also goes with my philosophy that you don't want to be locked into something proprietary. You know, for the longest time, it was Microsoft certifications everybody wanted. So you go out and you want to get your MCSE, Microsoft Certified System Engineer. But that was only useful in a Microsoft shop. Now, there's a lot of, you know, the majority of most places are Microsoft shops. That's typical. But, you know, I've always used and enjoyed Linux, BSD, Unix-y type of circumstances. So, I have my newer certifications are all in that, and that's what got me this job. They want a Linux guy, so they've got themselves a Linux guy, and I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm not fantastic, but I'm okay. So I also find myself getting more, you know, doing presentations. I found it interesting because you go, wow, this presentation I'm doing is about two levels above my pay grade. And people say, what do you do? And you go, I'm a systems operations specialist. And you go, what does that mean? And I go, I'm a Linux system admin. It says, but, you know, I'm doing this. So I'm not looking for that to be my terminal place in life. Or it might end up being my bread and butter when I really end up doing you know, something else entirely different. always give your employee really good value, but make your day at work. More expansive than just that. So, I guess that's kind of what I'm up to right now. I mean, you know, if I become some successful, amazing, wowee type of guy, I don't know what I'll really give people for advice. All I can do is tell the story and say, take from it what you will. You know, I'm not even saying it's good advice. I wouldn't call it advice myself. So this is what I did, and, you know, no intention of being some kind of superstar, because I take opportunities, and I try to rise to, and hopefully exceed, expectations. And you go, that's a dangerous thing to do. So you don't really want to be hired as some kind of superstar, because you can rarely live up to that thing. Anyway, so there's that. Anyway, I was getting impatient. When I get impatient or I'm bored, I tend to go look at jobs, look at opportunities. And I was doing what I would consider to be a pretty typical thing to do when you're doing this, or what I've always done, which is go for the jobs that are probably the least. Desirable under difficult circumstances that require you to be, you know, an interesting person. Because those jobs quickly have to compensate you for a lack of what most people want out of life. So I decided to get on the NSA site, you know, after all the Edward Snowden junk. Totally out of character for me because, you know, as a libertarian, I am somewhat against these things, which brought up the whole idea of team builders once I saw that thing to say, you know, you've left job over what would be considered little bitty issues. What most people wouldn't even care about, you know, they're all about the money. That I chose to stay away from those things when given the opportunity. It was funny because the NSA would almost immediately, I would have to convince them that I wasn't going to be a problem, and that's one thing they just don't want to mess with. They would rather have some antisocial person. I'm reasonably non-social. And they don't care, and they get buried in their work, and don't really come up for air very often. I talked to Lisa about it, showed her a thing. There was actually a guy who said that he had gotten a hold of their manual, which I really, you know, I don't know. Maybe not. That seemed a pretty fair assessment of the attitude of the NSA toward everything. Yeah, do they want to run your life? Absolutely. Do they want to make you, you know, do they want you to be kind of a cloistered monk? That would have worked for me some years ago if the NSA would have actually been a public entity. Actually not been some kind of weird secret. Back when I had left TGS, I probably would have happily gone to work with them and never given it a second thought. Hadn't really gotten much into politics at all. Hadn't really gotten into the stuff with Shetland. You know, even though I had gone offshore, I had had no contact with the locals at all, which probably would have done me great in the NSA. But now, yeah, we look back, and I've been encouraging my children to go international. They want to be able to scrutinize your whole family and what kind of interesting problems that might come from that. And it's just like, I don't want my children to have to feel curtailed because of my employment. I don't care how much money they pay me. And it probably would have been sizable. Probably would have been. So I just let it go. It's like, you know what? No. I'm not going to do it. I can't work for you guys. I can't work for what I consider to be basically evil. I don't know if it reawakened my kind of, so when you leave the United States, Jason, type thinking. I don't know. I have no idea. For a while there, I forget, because of the Foreign Service stuff. For a while there, I was curtailing some of my writing and stuff like that so that it wouldn't perhaps interfere with my possibilities of getting into the Foreign Service. And so, you know what? I think the same thing's true with the Foreign Service. It doesn't matter how much money it's going to make. What it might have been good for was it impelled me to go after my master's degree. It's in half summer. And hopefully it will put more time and effort into it here. In my walking future, so that I can for good things to happen. It's like the whole thing of, you know, nobody's going to pay attention to you if you don't have a PhD. And you go, my philosophy of the PhD is that ultimately you go after it with the assumption that, you know, to treat it like any other degree. I got this degree because I felt like it could be had. I've always shied away, you know, the first degree they came out with at Western Governors, which is where I'm taking my master's, was one in security. Information technology security. And I have little interest in that. I like more open organizations. I don't want to work protecting secrets particularly. I like universities for that reason, because they're not about they're not about those kinds of things at all. It's much more about you know, the pursuit of knowledge, the pursuit of betterment, which I think we're losing in favor of being so weird about security. So, you know, when I, after I'm done getting my master's, I'm working on my Shetland project. Originally, one of the ends of the Shetland project was that it would be the basis of a pretty good PhD, I thought. So I think I would just go ahead and do that work, write papers, do presentations on what came of it, and the UK is getting kind of in the forefront of PhD by publication. You know, where under normal circumstances you would do a whole bunch of, you know, you would do one dissertation and that would earn you, help you get your PhD. That'd be your basic activity. There's another way where it's just like, if you have a bulk of publications, that your portfolio indicating your understanding of whatever your papers were about would be the basis upon which you could get a PhD by publication. And it's spreading. Mostly on-the-job stuff, which I prefer. You know, it seems like ultimately that PhD is going to be rather inexpensive to get. And the whole attitude that it's a lower PhD. Either A, I don't think matters particularly. Because frankly, you've got a job. It isn't like you're some 20, 26, 27-year-old kid who's spent his whole time in school, you know, and got his PhD that way. Not that I want to denigrate that at all. But, but you've never really done anything. And if these guys come out, I mean, okay. The fact that they do well and they're well paid is true, but let me tell you, those days are sure coming to an end. There's all kinds of articles on the death of a tenured professor, which is pretty much what these guys do. You know, some of it has to do with other things. You know, if you go into a hard science and you're teaching a hard science, there's some good chance that you'll get a good industry job, a good industry research job. Which is fine and good. you know, and teaching jobs are great too, but if after you've done a PhD work and you're tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt due to it, it becomes the whole question of, if the best job you can get in the future is as an adjunct professor, because there's a glut of PhDs, and the amount of jobs for PhDs has not risen to meet the challenge. I find that interesting. And the basic thing tends to be that once push comes to shove, you become, you know, you're just doing it part-time, adjunct professor, paid basically by the hour. All the things that you would have wanted, I guess, if that was the direction you were going in, to be a university professor, are pretty much a washout. I'm just looking at one of the examples, and by and large, it's maybe one or two full-time tenured professors, and then a dozen, maybe two dozen, adjuncts. But the people that better have a day job, because this isn't their day job, particularly. Or it surely doesn't make the kind of money they're hoping for. So, my thing is to continue to certify what you already know. And you do that through, you know, now if there's this publication out, it'll be a question of whether this is even where it leads. You know, I might end up getting my PhD when I'm in my late 50s, early 60s. And that'll be my retirement, you know. That'll be part of my retirement income, is that I can go and be an adjunct at some college or university. And that'll be, you know, and that'll be that. Although I have no intention, you know, when people talk about retirement and that you're going to stay at home and, you know, I don't know, tie flies, get into fishing or something, you know, it's perfectly fine for some people. I don't have hobbies, never have, always been more of a driven person towards some kind of ultimate goal, but there's something bigger that you need to be about, that you do it until you die. So I don't know where that comes in with the whole thing. I don't know where that comes in with happy and content. Although I can say, you know, people always told me, why did you leave Tooth and Tree? You had a great job, you know. Well, you worked there a long time, so I could have worked there forever. People seem to forget that. I was bored stiff. And I was, I didn't feel like it was getting me where I needed to go. There's some things that are going to need to change anyway. So, So it's better just to get around to changing them. Always love the gumption to do so. Before Lisa got any more upset, had to grab it while Lisa was of a mood and a mind to make a change. Because it's a tricky thing for her. And now that we're kind of the infirm set, you know, I don't have the house that I bought when I was in my 20s. And it's paying off. That's gone. When push comes to shove, I've always got a place in Tucumcari. My mom's going to leave that thing. That's nothing changes, which may very well change. Being a different kind of guy. So when you say, "Boy, I want to follow in your footsteps," you go, I don't understand that. You know, because you tried to be doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, it would either be, they want my lifestyle, or they want my, income, or if it ends up being prestige, they want the prestige that I might have. I don't even know if I'm gonna have, I don't have any of those things now. I have none of them. And that's, you know, and I'm pursuing something that is indistinct, to say the least. So that's all I can say. I don't know where this is all headed, but the whole point is, We're gonna ride this train and see where it goes. And I have no idea where it's heading. So yeah, NSA job, no. Foreign Service job, probably not. Because it's too confining. They want to have a little more control about what to do. And I don't need that. If you don't need it in the long term. Let me tell you, I read this post from this guy who left the Foreign Service that took several months before that could be done. And system not really made for that. System made for you staying there until the day you die. And that's not really very interesting at all. So. Gotta leave my options open. And yeah, if it ends up being where you live, you live in Lurwick or Shetland, and you go, where the heck is that? And you go, that's an interesting point, Pat. Constantly flying out, doing this and doing that, or trying to bring conferences to Lurwick. And, that ends up being the answer. So, yeah, when people say, oh, Lurwick, hey, what are you doing, Lurwick? And you go, I'm just me. You know? I think it becomes an interesting question of at what point does my day job morph to the point to where it doesn't matter where I live. So we'll just see. Get up here on that. Alright. Here we go. Oops.